Real quick, we've got Representative Brian Harrison, who represents Ellis County HD10.
Yep, HD10.
Got it right.
That's right.
Waxahachie is the seat.
Got Waxahachie, Midlothian, Ennis, and then a lot of other small towns.
Fantastic. And you came in right at the tail end of the third special session in 2021.
That's right.
When vaccine mandates were on the special session call, correct?
The day I was sworn in, or with give or take 24 hours, I was sworn in with 8 days to go in the third special session in 2021. And it was either the day before or the day of that I was sworn in, the governor added to the call. I actually think it was the night before. I think it was like around late in the evening, the night before I was sworn in the next morning.
And you immediately filed a bill?
By lunchtime.
Okay.
By noon.
The Texas COVID Vaccine Freedom Act.
So right.
Let's reverse a little bit and let's talk about your background.
Yeah.
What brought you to the Texas legislature, where you were right before that during COVID?
Sure. Yeah, so got to have sort of a front row seat to history, as it were, regarding to the, you know, the once-in-a-generation, or actually once-in-a-century size pandemic that the United States and the world found itself in. When COVID struck, I was serving the people of the United States as the chief of staff of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services under President Trump. And a lot of folks are maybe less familiar with HHS, as they are our sort of component organizations. So we oversee Medicare, Medicaid, the CDC, the National Institutes for Health, the Food and Drug Administration, and about 22 other operating and staff divisions.
Just a small little government agency.
Well, I'll tell you a little trivia about that will make my small government, it does make my small government heart hurt a little bit. If the state of Texas, you'll hear the governor say this all the time, that, you know, if we were our own nation state, Texas would be the ninth largest economy on earth. Mm-hmm. And that's a big point of pride for Texans.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something that is not a point of pride for me. If the agency that I used to be the chief of staff of, if HHS was its own nation state, it would be the fifth.
Wow.
Which is horrible and unsustainable. When I showed up, we had a $1.4 trillion budget. 26 divisions, 85,000 staff, about 100,000 contractors. And just one of our divisions, the FDA, regulates one out of every $4 in the American economy.
Oh, wow. My word. Okay, so how did that experience with HHS kind of move you to be a little bit more skeptical of public health bureaucracy?
So, you know, all of the nation's public health agencies are situated, they're housed within the Department of Health and Human Services. So
okay.
I got to work intimately closely with and helped oversee the nation's public health apparatus. And one of the things that became very important to me was, and very apparent to me, was the amount of power that is wielded in what I would call an unconstitutional manner by unelected officials who aren't elected by anybody. You know, when our framers put the Constitution together, it was very important for them that the hurdle be set really high for the government, especially a federal government, to act in a way that would deprive you of any kind of liberty. And so, you know, all of the Congress had to agree word for word on mm-hmm. a bill, and then it had to go to the Senate, who had to agree word for word, and then it had to go to the president. Well, that's a hard thing to do, and our founders knew that. That was a feature, not a bug. But what's happened is, especially over the last generation and a half, is that legislative bodies at both the federal and, by the way, the state level, legislative bodies have outsourced their responsibility to the nameless, faceless bureaucrats in the executive branch agencies. And so I spent a massive percentage of my time running sort of a deregulatory effort, because HHS is the biggest regulatory body on earth. And I wanted to make sure that the American people were as maximally free from being under the boot of regulatory burden, because a regulation carries the full force of law.
Yes.
But no congressman voted on it, no senator voted on it. But anybody who can sign a reg has the full power of the Congress, the Senate, and the presidency in their hand.
Oof.
And so I did everything I could to remove the power from the bureaucrats and put it back to the people. And so, having lived through the experience of COVID, being quite literally, I believe, the first official in D.C. that the CDC notified when it detected 27 cases of pneumonia-like illness in Wuhan, China. That's all they knew.
Wow.
They called me on, I can't remember if it was call or email, maybe both, on December 31st of 2019. And they informed me they had detected 27 cases of something in Wuhan, China. Didn't know what.
Mm.
And looking back, it's hard to remember or think back how earth-changing, quite literally, you know, that notification was. And then to live through all of the efforts, including, you know, the development of, so we stood up Operation Warp Speed. It wasn't just vaccines. People forget this. When we were in charge of it under President Trump, it was testing was a part of it, and medicines and therapeutics were a part of it. And yes, vaccines were a part of it. But it was paramount to me from the beginning, because we were sort of the Medical Freedom Administration. I'm a very huge proponent of medical freedom. I know you are too. That medical decisions be kept between doctors and patients. And so it was very critical and foundational for us that vaccines or medicines or testing be left between doctors and patients and never forced on anybody. And so when I ended up coming into the legislature just a few months later, because I moved home when Joe Biden took over, he put his hand on the Bible. That very week, I had two U-Haul trailers rented and I was driving home.
Yep.
And anyway, ended up getting elected. And so I knew starting the day after I won a special election that if Texas, that the great state of Texas, or I'm a native Texan, I love the state. I love the 30 million people who proudly call Texas home. If we could allow people, especially if it was unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., to force needles into the arms of Texans against their will, we might as well throw out the whole foundation for the Constitution, for federalism, for medical freedom, for informed consent. And so I started working literally the day after I won on a bill that became the Texas COVID Vaccine Freedom Act. And like you said, I filed it within 3.5 hours, I think, of being sworn in. A long answer to your question.
No, that's fine. Great. And we'll fast forward to November of last year.
Yes.
You won your election. Mm-hmm. And then filing opens in the Texas legislature for existing legislators. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the first bills that you filed?
I think it was the first. I think we filed it on the day within hours of bill filing even being permissible. Mm-hmm. And we succeeded. It got a very low number. I think it was a double-digit number. I think it was HB 81 in this session. And I from the day I filed it, I started working really hard with every member that would talk to me mm-hmm. about this bill. And between I get the numbers confused between whether it was the special at the end of 21 or when I filed it in 22 on the second time. But we had, I think, the majority of the Republican caucus mm-hmm. that I had personally met with, personally walked through the bill, walked through the common sense provisions. I'm happy to describe it if you want. But I think we had a majority of the Republican caucus or close to it that signed on. They wanted to be a co-author on the bill.
I watched you. I watched you walk the halls with that bill and thread that needle so expertly. It was a beautiful sight to see. And you're right. That bill ended up with over 40, if not 50 co-authors. Yeah. It was a triumph.
Bipartisan. So you met Vinton Jones, who tends to be far more liberal.
He's far. Look, Vinton and I don't vote on much of anything the same. It's probably an understatement. But we actually developed a little bit of a relationship over that bill because of the amount of time I spent walking him through it. So yes, while he is I think he would describe himself as a liberal Democrat, he does have graduate degrees in public health. Mm-hmm. He's worked on, I think, some CDC advisory panels. So he had a real interest in the subject matter. And I think his first instinct was to not like it. You know, that was the position of sort of a lot of the Democrat caucus. But I asked him, I said, well, you know, will you spend some time with me? I went to his office and met with him in person for I don't even know how long. I remember sitting parked in my truck in my property in Ellis County on the phone with him for probably hours over the weekends, trying to walk him through the various provisions. And he had some misconceptions about some of the things the bill did, and eventually got him to agree to sign on as a joint author on the bill. So, yeah, there was just overwhelming support that I had been able to amass over the 2 years from the time I first filed it to the time we were debating it in this most recent session. And by the way, that includes representatives of, you know, the business community, mm-hmm. For example, you know, to TLR, to folks with the hospitals, who, by the way, would have been the most impacted by my bill.
Yep.
By the time we were done with it, they were on board with the bill, all the way to on the right in the political spectrum, the Republican Party of Texas and the vaccine subcommittee. So there was overwhelming, widespread, bipartisan, enthusiastic support to do the right thing for Texans and ban COVID mandates in this state.
And yet,
what happened?
And we're here still talking about the bill. It did not pass. So I'll tell you the history of what happened in the bill. So a good friend and fellow movement conservative, Senator Mays Middleton, mm-hmm. And I teamed up on the effort. He had just been elected to the Senate mm-hmm. right after I got elected to the House, and he wanted to know if he could be the sponsor in the Senate. And I was incredibly excited to partner with Senator Middleton on that, and I got to give him tremendous credit. He worked the bill in the Senate as well as I could have ever hoped for anybody to do, and got it passed out of the Senate, got it through the Senate Public Health Committee, got it through the floor of the Senate with bipartisan support, a big margin in the Senate that it passed. I was able in the House, like I told you, to get just overwhelming support from not just the majority of Republicans, but even some Democrats on the bill. When it went to the House Public Health Committee, It passed out of that committee 10-1, which is almost unprecedented for even slightly contentious public health bills. But this was a bill that everybody understood. And there was only one Democrat that voted against it. So every Republican on House Public Health supported it. Every Democrat, except for one, a very liberal Democrat out of Houston, Ann Johnson, who told me explicitly she wants unvaccinated Texans to be fired. Well, I can't beat that. Okay, yeah. You know, if that's your position, that's your position. She was the only one to oppose it.
And she represents
the medical center in Houston. She sure does.
Yes. And let's talk about that hearing. Yeah. That was a fun hearing, wasn't it, for you?
that may well have been my first hearing or my first bill out. Layout as a member of the Texas House of Representatives.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, you handled that very well. I just want to give you
a lot of pushback.
Humongous props for handling, because a couple of those committee members did not hold any punches.
No, there were people that were really geared up. Some very liberal lobbying organizations in the state armed up some of the folks on the committee. And then, of course, in particular, Ann Johnson was on that committee herself. And so I think she had decided to take it upon herself to do her best to kill the bill in committee.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I had spent so many years and so much time working not just on the bill, but on the issue at large, the issue of vaccine policy and public health policy, given my background in the Trump administration, I wasn't going to let her do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty safe to say, if anybody's really bored and wants to go watch the 60 to 90 minutes of the interrogation she tried to put me under, she thought she was going to get the best of me, and she didn't. The arguments for medical freedom are just stronger than the arguments from the left against it.
And you held your own, for sure. And so there was a marathon hearing on the Senate side for SB 177, the Senate version of the bill. It went through House Public Health. Both bills were voted out of the House Public Health Committee.
By huge margins.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And next, and if people don't know, it goes to the Calendars Committee.
Something called the Calendars Committee.
Yes.
That's right. This is the great mystery in the Texas legislature. What is the House Calendars Committee? You know, because people will think, well, it got out of the House Public Health Committee. That's the committee of jurisdiction.
Right.
That's where the experts come and weigh in. And you have your hearing. Well, so it passed out of there so overwhelmingly. So next stop is the floor, right? Well, no, it has to go to this great mystery called the House Calendars Committee. And what this basically is, the House Calendars Committee is a instrument of the speaker. It is a tool of the leadership of the House, and it's got both Republicans and Democrats on it. In fact, the number two person on that committee is an extremely liberal Democrat. So this is one of the oddities, something that I found very strange, having done battle in the D.C. swamp, you know, against the left, as I come into the Texas House. Well, what in the world are all these Democrats doing in charge of these very senior leadership positions? And so the number two in the Calendars Committee is a far-left liberal Democrat. And the chair of the Calendars Committee is somebody who is effectively the number two in the House, the number two in terms of the power they wield on behalf of the speaker. And for whatever reason, the decision was made by the chair of that committee to kill the bill and basically keep it from getting to the floor. If the Texas COVID Vaccine Freedom Act had gotten to the floor, and I think you guys would agree with this, that bill would have passed with overwhelming support, probably 100 votes,
at least,
if not
100.
More. You know,
I agree.
Maybe more.
Yeah.
And think about this, too. So why did the speaker and the chair of calendars, his name is Dustin Burroughs, why did they choose to kill the Texas COVID Vaccine Freedom Act? Why was it so important for Dustin Burroughs to have and allow unvaccinated Texans to continue to be fired across the state? Why was it so important to the leadership of the Texas House to deprive 30 million Texans of medical freedom? That's a question that I've been asking publicly, and the Texans have not gotten an answer to. But, you know, they deserve to know. Because, and here's the really, really shocking thing. So even Joe Biden has taken away his COVID vaccine mandate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in the state of Texas, COVID vaccine mandates are alive and well. Freedom-loving Texans, right now, as I'm talking to you, as we're having coffee, there are Texans that are having to make the unconscionable decision between their livelihood, providing for their family, and their bodily autonomy, their medical freedom. That is a choice that I find morally repugnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not going to stop fighting on this. I don't care, you know, how many sessions it takes. I don't care whether the governor. I put out a letter today asking the governor to add it to the special session agenda.
Thank you.
This bill would pass so overwhelmingly. This should be the easiest thing on there. But I'm not going to stop fighting until Texas has freedom from COVID tyranny.
And to your credit, you have filed it every session that you've been a legislator.
Yep.
And now you're taking it to the grassroots, and we are fully in support of that effort. We've taken it to some county GOP executive committees, but you Worked with the city of Odessa, the city council there. So talk a little bit about what happened there last
week. So what we're seeing, and this is just, I can't believe I'm having to say this as a proud Texan. Texans deserve and are still demanding medical freedom.
Yes.
And their government at the state level has failed them. Mm-hmm. The Senate did its job. And quite frankly, the governor for 2 years was demanding a legislative fix to fight COVID tyranny. It was, the failure is all in the Texas House, and not just the members of the Texas House, the members of the Texas. I feel bad for my colleagues. Mm-hmm. The leadership of the Texas House deprived every Republican in the Texas House from being able to go home and tell their constituents, I voted for your medical freedom.
Yep.
I do not know. And again, Speaker Phelan and Dustin Burrows need to explain to 30 million Texans why they wanted to deprive all of them of their medical freedom. But where the state house has failed, local officials are stepping up. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't be more proud of the leadership that was displayed by the city council in Odessa. I traveled out to Odessa, which is not close to my district.
No, it's not close to anywhere.
No, we literally jumped in the vehicle. We drove to Odessa and drove back in the same day. Ooh. But it was so important to me to be a part of them when they took what I characterize as a truly historic action to have a city say, you know what? This should have been handled somewhere in the last couple of years by our state government. They failed. We are not going to let our citizens, proud residents of Odessa, who just want to make, you know, earn a living, provide for their family. Yes. We're not going to subject them to COVID tyranny anymore. And so I was very proud to work with them and to partner with them. And they passed, I think it's the first resolution in the state of Texas banning all forms of COVID tyranny. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I sent a letter to every mayor, every county judge in the state. We're having a hard time, my office and I, keeping up with the phone calls we're getting.
That's great.
Mayors of big cities and county judges wanting to do the same thing. They're all trying to figure out, okay, well, how do we do this? It takes time to get something through their lawyers. And,
yes.
But there is just such a, Texans are starving.
Yes.
For bold conservative leadership. Mm-hmm. They're expecting it out of their state government. The Texas House failed them. So county judges and mayors and local officials are stepping up to stand the gap. And I'm hoping, I'm predicting that Odessa is not going to be the last to do it.
And we've provided different versions of the resolution for people to take to their city council, yep. to their county commissioner's court. I believe Aransas County Commissioner Rousseau, I think is her last name, is planning to bring it forth there. And then school boards to not sign into contracts with vendors who require the COVID vaccine. But aside from our supporters and your supporters going to their city councils, their county commissioners, their GOP executive committees and pushing for this, what can they do to support your efforts? Because I anticipate you'll be filing it in the special session, whether it's on the call or not.
Yeah, no, I've said that. I'm going to file it in every special session because the governor correctly has said he's going to call several special sessions. We've already had two.
Yes.
And it's a broader topic, but the governor's exactly right to do that because we had such a spectacularly unconservative session. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, from border security to medical freedom to stopping the communist, Chinese from buying up our land, we failed Texans on conservative priority after conservative priority. And look, medical freedom's got to be on the top of that list. Border security's got to be on the top of that list. But yes, I have committed, no matter how many special sessions that we have, I'm going to file that in every single special session. Because here's the interesting thing. People don't realize this. The Constitution doesn't actually stop the House from passing bills that are not on the call. So I would go a step further. And yes, the governor would, at some point in the process, it would have to be on the agenda. But literally nothing stops the Speaker or the leadership of the Texas House from passing any bill they want.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean the Senate has to take it up. Doesn't mean the governor has to. So at some point, yes, the governor would have to take an action. But there's nothing in the world that would stop it. And I think that there are 30 million Texans out there that if they knew that the Texas House of Representatives could pass a bill to defeat COVID tyranny and chose not to do it, I think they'd be rightfully very upset about that.
Yeah. And our bread and butter always has been the on-the-ground action from supporters in their districts, in their regions.
Right.
They love to pick up a phone. They love to fire off emails. Good. So who should they be directing their
Well, good anchors? Question. And the easiest, so I love to hear that because, you know, my title is state representative, okay? So I represent 200,000 Texans. Everybody in the Texas House has the same title.
Mm-hmm.
They are there to be the voice, to be the fighter for the thing, all the things they said on the campaign trail on behalf of 200,000 at a time, totaling about 30 million. Senators have about a million constituents. They need to hear from the people who put them in office. And because I know this issue, because I know Texas, I know Texans want the Texas COVID Vaccine Freedom Act passed. I know Texans do not believe in COVID tyranny. Texans do not want COVID mandates forced on them.
Right.
So what I would say is call your officials in the legislature, call your state representative, call your senator. Listen, the senators and the representatives, their job is to be annoyed by you.
Mm-hmm.
And they have staff. And you pay them to be annoyed by you. Okay, so call them and annoy them. Okay, tell them as many times until they get the message that you do not want COVID mandates any longer to exist in the state of Texas. And then I would call, even though you probably don't live down in the region the speaker represents or the leadership of the calendars committee, I would call them and tell them you expect them to protect medical freedom. And I think it's a very fair question to ask. Why did you stop the ban on COVID mandates? Because that affects 30 million Texans. It doesn't just affect the Texans, you know, in their
district. In that district.
I want an answer. That's a fair question every Texan should be asking. Why were COVID mandates protected instead of banned? And then what I would say, too, if the Texas House continues to fail and not defend medical freedom, call your mayor, call your city council, call your school board, and call your county judges and call your county commissioners. You know, counties don't maybe have as much authority as home rule cities, but the bottom line is they can at least pass a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
They can do something to show leadership. They can do something to put the pressure on the elected officials at the state level who, for whatever reason, have chosen to continue depriving 30 million Texans of medical freedom.
Yeah. Well, if the COVID response taught us anything was just how powerful those county judge positions are. So
yes, and that's a whole other topic.
Which is
how to deal with emergency powers.
I mean, it's not a fool's errand, I guess, the point I'm trying to make, to reach out to those county judges and your county commissioners, because they do have a lot of power.
No, and that's the thing too that I think it's an important point to make, and I know it's slightly off topic, but it's very related to the experience we had through COVID. Listen, when I left, and then again, I stayed in the Trump administration until literally the last minute. I was working until noon on January 20th of 2021. And I'm really proud to say that the second up until the last minute we left office, that we were in office, there was not one single federal COVID mandate of any sort. All the lockdown orders, all the vaccine mandates, those were all state, county, city ordinances and orders. And we had, and I hate to say it, even in the state of Texas, there were people being thrown in jail for violating orders down here. And without relitigating history, if we don't learn the lessons of what we all lived through as a nation, and quite frankly, as a planet, 3 years ago, then at some point, somebody would fairly ask, aren't we a little bit responsible if that's ever repeated?
Yeah. I mean, if Gavin Newsom is now walking back some of that stuff and we still have COVID vaccine mandates in Texas, I think there's something.
Even Joe Biden got rid of his COVID mandate for vaccines, and we still have those in Texas.
Well, and I just want to tell you, I mean, just last week, I got phone calls from three people still dealing with COVID mandates in their workplace. So this is not a hypothetical. These are real Texans that are still facing this decision.
And one thing that I think it's important to point out too, that's the point of a lot of confusion for people, is there are a lot of elected officials in Texas that are putting out messages that say we banned COVID mandates.
Mm-hmm.
I need to clarify this a little bit. There was a bill that did pass. It was called SB 29.
Yes.
It was a fine bill. I voted for it. I do not have objections to the bill. The problem is it was so narrowly tailored that it didn't really get at any of the mandates that, unfortunately, we have in the state of Texas. It was really only applicable to government entities, what are called political subdivisions of the state. So it applies to counties and applies to cities and school districts. So it stops government COVID mandates. Well, the problem is we don't really have any government COVID mandates, and we haven't for some time. There may be one or two here or there, or maybe one or two that are thinking about coming back. So like it was a fine bill. Mm-hmm. Happy to vote for it. But in terms of all the mandates that actually existed before that bill was passed, they all still exist today.
Correct.
And unfortunately, more are coming out online, given that the healthcare workers counterintuitively actually have less protection than they did even under Biden's mandate, because Biden's mandate required exemptions.
Right.
Some of these healthcare workers now don't have any exemptions because Biden's mandate is gone.
Yep.
And so I hear from doctors on a very regular basis that are struggling to get exemptions written for their patients. And just think about that. In 2023, in Texas, we still have COVID vaccine mandates.
And
Texans are losing their livelihoods.
Yeah.
And we have a nursing shortage. And some of the people who are most subject to these mandates are these healthy 21, 22-year-old men and women who want to go into nursing or want to go into medical school, but they're being denied a slot. They can't do their clinical rotations. These are people that are very healthy on average. And in a lot of cases, their doctors are saying, well, you don't need a COVID vaccine, you know? And that's why medical freedom is so important, because the doctors and patients got to make these decisions, not the government, not bureaucrats. And quite frankly, in this case with COVID, not even your employer, because if you're a healthy 16-year-old male, your risk profile, if you get COVID, is dramatically different than if you're a 76-year-old who weighs 400 pounds and has 17 comorbidities.
Yeah.
Your decision on whether a vaccine makes sense for you is dramatically different. So these one-size-fits-all tyrannical COVID vaccine mandates, they got to go. They have no place in Texas.
Well, I really appreciate, I mean, we are all so grateful for your persistence on this issue, because if not for you, I'm not sure that this would be a priority for anybody in the legislature. Even the best champions that we have in there haven't been quite as persistent and
vocal.
And yeah. We're here for it all day long. I mean, you've been great on Twitter, Brian E. Harrison.
That's right. Brian E. Harrison, yeah.
I encourage everybody to follow him, and you post at least once a day about COVID tyranny. So.
Well, it's one thing that I think is important is not just for me to listen to my constituents, yeah. and I have a 100% meeting policy. If I represent you and you want to meet with me, you're in the door. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also really important to complete the communication loop. I think it's important for Texans, not just the ones I represent, but every vote that I take affects 30 million people. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important for folks to know and hear firsthand, without a filter of the media, you know, what I'm doing down there on behalf of every single Texan. And because liberty and freedom, those aren't confined to people in House District 10.
Right.
That campaign affects the lives of every single Texan.
Well, we just, again, want to reiterate our just deep gratitude for you and your just the way you articulate this issue so well. And on behalf of all Texans, thank you.
Well, thank you. And I want to reciprocate that. The grassroots, like I say this all the time, if we're going to save the state of Texas, and sadly, there are days where that's a question. It is.
Many days.
If we're going to save Texas, it's not going to come from the top down. It's not going to come from special interest in Austin. It's not going to come from the Democrats or their allies in the mainstream traditional media. It is going to come from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. It's going to come from grassroots activists. It's going to come from people who, at their core, understand the principles that made our nation and our state great: individual liberty, freedom, federalism, a government that's constrained in its power by the limits placed on it by the Constitution. I know you're talking to just hundreds of thousands or millions of those Texans every day. So thank you for the work that that you do to reinforce the voice of the activist grassroots across the state.
Yeah. Keep fighting the good fight.
Going to do it.
We're going to be behind you 100%.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.